Welcome to Pull Up a Seat with your host, Alex Starr.
All right. Lawrence Smith, toking up a blunt at the beginning of a podcast. First time.
Yes, sir.
Did you calm the nerves a little bit?
Yeah, did you switch? That's right. I put a little tequila in this club soda, so had to try it out. The neighbor gave it, so.
Nice, dude.
Did you switch? Shit, I put too much. Did you switch over to smoking more when you quit drinking?
I did. It helped out a lot. Like, crazy. It just made everything so much better. When I was drinking, it was the lowest point of my life. I was drinking during the day. I was drinking around family. I was drinking in my truck in my room at night. You know, it was bad.
Just, what happened? What led up to? I mean, I know what happened at the end of the season last year.
Yeah, that had a lot to do with it. You know, my sister passed away right on our last fire, and dealing with that mess. I mean, I don't want to say mess, but just having the drama from the extended family, and you know, trying to be there for my family that's here in Arizona.
Yeah,
it was just, you know, I crumpled under the pressure. I tried to hold up as best as I could, and I just slowly going down, just spiraled out of control.
Just a toilet bowl.
Yeah.
Who were you trying to be strong for?
My mom, mostly, because, yeah. You know, my mom has 8 kids, and I'm the second oldest. My sister that passed away was the third oldest.
Uh-huh.
And for about 3 years, it was just, you know, her, my older sister, Reagan, and I, you know, myself, you know. And my mom always called Tina her special tea.
Oh,
you know,
that's her sister who passed away.
Yeah, they're like, my sister and I, we were very much alike, dude.
Really?
Like, what do you see me do?
Even before you grew your hair out?
Yeah. Yeah, like once we party together, like, we're like nonstop. We just feed off each other.
Really?
Yeah, and like throughout the season, I just saw a picture the other day of like us. Like one day, I just got paid on a Friday or something, and I was like, "Come on, let's go out." And so I take her and my other sister Jana. She would drive us because she was underage. So she would just drive us around these bars and not pay for a drink, and we'd just have like a grand old time.
Nice.
But yeah, for us it was weird because, you know, growing up on the reservation, dude, you don't see very many sober people having fun.
Yeah, dude. So yeah, there was a few things I wanted to really talk to you about. One was the drinking. How long are you sober now for? 8 months? 9 months?
Going on 8 months.
As you exhale.
Yeah, about 3 or 4 weeks, about 8 months.
8 months, nice, dude. Congrats, that's awesome. So we were talking about the truck. Now you're stone cold sober, haven't touched a drink. You haven't even taken a sip, have you?
No.
I haven't seen you take a sip. You got a house, you just bought a house. Congrats. Yeah. That's badass. Just bought a fucking sweet motorcycle. I'm jealous of.
Yeah. Well, that truck that I bought it this year with my tax return.
Nice. Yeah.
So in 1 year, like, as soon as I stopped drinking, dude, pretty much.
Really?
When all this came out, when I got my new truck, then we started the season, you know, and I got my bike, and now I'm getting this house.
So how did that momentum, like, perpetuate into other aspects of your life? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How did it, like, turn into this, like, did you stop drinking and you're, obviously you become healthier.
Yeah.
You started losing weight, you started, just realizing decisions that you want to make,
yeah,
in a sober mindset, and that led you, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Is that what happened?
It did, you know, lit a fire in my ass, you know, to get my shit together. And, you know, I realized what was going on about a week before I stopped. I was talking to my sister Gianna, and I'm living with her at this time, and we're going to the Circle K and spending the last bit of money I had from unemployment, you know, and I'm telling her, like, I think I got a problem. I need to quit. She's very supportive and kind of naive.
Uh-huh.
You know, and she sees the best in people. And so she was like, no, I don't think you got a problem. I think you're okay. You seem to be doing okay. Then this is as I'm buying two malt liquors, you know?
Yeah.
So then after that, dude, it's...
What was the day you decided to stop?
I want to say it's February 25th.
You woke up that morning and got over it?
Well, my niece was born a couple days before.
Wake up call?
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's pretty much happened, like...
Little blessing just popped out there, huh?
Yeah. In my family, they don't really hold back, so they weren't afraid to, you know, let me know.
That your drinking was out of control?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So besides your sister, everyone else was...
Yeah.
Okay.
But now everybody knows I do this.
Yeah. It looks badass with that ring, too, dude. So, yeah, when you were... Do you think that, like... I mean, pretty much a lot of people have, you know, issues with drinking or getting into it. But on the reservation, when you grew up, I looked up some stats.
Yeah.
Okay? Because I'm super interested in life on reservations because... It's like, I tried to explain reservations when I was in South America.
Yeah.
To the people I was living with in Peru. And I couldn't for the life of me explain it. Because they were asking me about Native Americans. And I was like, yeah, well, they have reservations, but they're like their own entity. They're like a sovereign state, but they're still part of the U.S., but they're not, but they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I didn't really know how to explain it that well. But the stats I pulled up were that there's 2.9 million Native Americans, which is 0.9% of the population.
Yeah.
So negligent, right? And then some really interesting health stats were that tuberculosis, there's a 600% higher rate. These are all among Native Americans, okay?
Yeah.
Alcoholism, this is pertains to you specifically very well, 510% higher.
Damn.
Alcoholism, dude.
Damn.
This is off of the Bureau of Indian Affairs website.
Yeah.
Diabetes is 189% higher, and Indian youth have higher rate of suicide among all ethnic groups. So, from your experience, what the fuck is going on? From what you saw, you grew up near Seattle, right?
Not really near Seattle.
It was in Washington.
It was Washington State, and... It's this reservation called Skokomish. It's like a sub-tribe of this giant nation of Tawana.
Okay.
How do I explain it? Well, there's the Puget Sound, right?
Right.
And this is big body of water that separates Washington from when it forks off and goes up like that. I'm near, like, the very bottom of the Puget Sound.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so...
That's at. So what was it like growing up on it?
Well, for my reservation, it is very fortunate, I believe. Because growing up on a... Like, looking at the reservations here in Arizona, there's nothing...
The land is terrible.
It's terrible.
It's, yeah.
But in Washington State, everything's so green, and it rains 10 months out of the year. And we live right next to the river. In Skokomish, that's what it means, people of the river.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So that's how a lot of us would make a living... Is fishing during fishing season, doing whatever we can on the body of water, getting shrimp, crab, oysters, going clam digging in the mud, you know. That was the hustle where I was at.
Okay.
So there and around here, you know, there's nothing. What could they do? Yeah. Like the natives around here,
harvest mesquite.
Yeah, they can't really do anything, you know. So they. This is all they got to look forward to is getting fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case there.
It still was the case.
Okay.
But I...
You think it's more prevalent here?
Maybe, but it's nice knowing that there's always a way to make money.
Right. Yeah, because are most of the other reservations... Have you been on other ones?
I've been to a couple, and there's one that was right by us called Squaxin. And they own this casino. And their tribe compared to our tribe is wealthy.
Really?
Very wealthy.
Did it feel like that was better for everyone that lived on the reservation?
Oh, definitely. They have a standard of living. And the reservation, they maintain it pretty well. They, you know, they regulate the people, letting them know you can't have too much trash. Because, like, remember that village in Alaska?
Yeah.
You go to this village, just these group of houses and these people, they're all family. They're the oldest community out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And what do you see? You see garbage and carcasses everywhere.
There was a ton of... I was shocked.
Yeah. These are people that...
Why is that? Why do you think that is? Because I find it fascinating that 300 years ago, or no, not that, let's go, 500 years ago, Native Americans were like stewards of the land. You know, everything you read, you know, is that they are very connected with the land. They live off the land. And then now it seems like society kind of ate them up and spit them back out. And so now those ones in Alaska, those are not people who... were like connected to the land at all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was their yards were junkyards.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, definitely. That village was a shithole.
And,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad to see that in that short of time, these people went from like this extreme connection to the land to an almost like disowning it because like they have nothing. I don't know. Well, why do you think that was? Or why do you think that is?
A lot of them don't even care, like,
what's that? Because, like you said, they have nothing, almost nothing to live for, and they just get the checks, and it's just like, well, fuck, we can't do what we used to do.
And they all, like, most of them that I know, or the way that I saw a lot of my family grow up, is they lived off welfare.
Okay.
Milk the system, like, using welfare and food stamps and everything like that. And there was... Nobody ever left the reservation. If people left the reservation, they never came back. Or they would go to like where some of their family is. They would never venture off on their own.
Try to make it into regular like contemporary normal society. Okay, where
you know you're a contributing member of society.
Sure.
You know? That's a big thing. Like, nobody leaves, and I don't know why they're scared. Well, a lot of my family, they never left.
Because they're scared?
It's easy to say that, but who knows? I mean, right. It could be. But I believe so. You know, I was scared when I left, but I don't regret it.
Right.
It's the greatest thing that happened to me.
Right.
You know?
So they're in... Yeah, so it is really like a country inside of this country. Because there's its own culture...
Yeah.
Own language. Own customs and such, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that you saw.
And it's kind of going downhill with that, depending on where you're at.
Like, oh, really?
Like in the Lakotas and the ones that I met from North Dakota, they were still very involved in their history. But on my reservation, nobody knows the language. The only people that know the language are the grandparents.
Right, right. So they're all dying languages.
Yeah.
That's too bad, man.
Just to see how far people have fallen, you know, it's...
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think could help that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what, like, the people in Alaska, they could live off the land...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very, you know, fertile area.
Yeah.
But do you think that the problem is, like most people, if you're gonna give people money, like if you give people money, then...
I'd say it's they maybe more can... positive role models than anything, because the people that we always looked up to were people who were involved, were very good at sports.
Uh-huh.
You know? Because a reservation, like once you get into it, it's like a little ghetto out in the middle of nowhere.
Are all of them, most of them like that?
Most of one of them that I've been to.
Yeah.
You know, and you can always, well, like for me, it's easy to tell which ones were alcoholics and drinking. I mean, you saw in Alaska, this guy on the side of the highway or on the road just falls back and he's still drunk, you know?
Yeah. I heard about that guy.
And seeing all that, like, the people who were involved, like, they were in my life that when I was growing up on there was my dad's and his friends. And my dad was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And so was his friends, so they always were getting fucked up during the daytime.
Yeah.
And when I did see him work, they would take me, like, my dad would, I call him my dad. He's not really my dad. He's the one that, he was with my, he got with my mom, helped raise her, these three kids, you know, and, but he's really not my father.
Right, okay. As you call him. He's not your biological.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Okay,
the one that raises you is usually more of a dad than the biological one anyway.
Yeah. But, yeah, he would take me with him, like, showing me how to shrimp and crab and everything on the boat. Okay. You know, pulling in the nets and taking the salmon out, or the trout, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And then, but most of the time, I'd see him drinking. And my mom, she would go get his weed for him, too.
Uh-huh.
And I know whenever when he was drinking, he was mostly happy, loud, belligerent, you know?
Yeah.
Then, as I got older, I started seeing he was beating on my mom a lot more.
Oh, shit.
And it's not unusual to see that on the reservation or hear your neighbors, your old lady, someone beating up on their old lady.
Really?
Yeah, and when that would happen, we would leave the house. You know, I would run to my grandparents' house or a friend's house, get all my sisters and just bolt, you know.
Hide out for a while?
Yeah. And just pray to God that someone called the cops.
And would they?
Yeah, someone eventually would. Then, you know, that being the routine for, like, until I was like 12 years old.
Wow, and that's when you left. That's when you all left, right?
Yeah, that's when my mom left. Met Anthony, the guy that she's with now.
Yeah.
The dad that bought my house.
Right, yeah. And he does fire in Sierra Vista, or?
On Fort Huachuca, yeah.
Because we saw him once. We saw him last year sometime.
Yeah, he works structure on the Army base over there at Fort Huachuca.
Oh, okay.
But he was Forest Service long before that.
Okay. So you guys, yeah, wow. That's insane. So that was until you were 12, was just, your dad was a drunk, nice guy.
Yeah.
But drunk, beat up, would beat your mom. You and your sisters would hide in terror.
To get back what I was talking about, like, positive role models and stuff.
Yeah.
I got this kid I used to grow up, his name is Andrew Tanaza, we call him Bo. He was his...
How'd he get Bo from Andrew Tanaza?
He's just, like, being called Bo.
Nice.
You know?
That's a little easier to say.
We're out there at night, we don't have doing anything on the weekends, so we'd play basketball, pick up games of basketball, and hang and go seek, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'd always thought, I'd always join in, but Bo was amazing, dude. Crazy good.
At basketball?
Yeah. I was just, like, somewhat athletic, but, you know, he made everything move so, like it's, you know...
Effortless. Yeah, yeah. I know kids like that, yeah.
So, everybody knew he was good ever since the beginning. He ended up getting a scholarship to the University of Washington, I want to say, for his basketball. And now he's creating this... he owns a gym, have his own business.
Was he your age?
Yeah.
Okay, but so he was kind of like this peer that everybody looked up to. So did you see him as, like, I don't want to be too dramatic here, but did you see him as, like, hope? Do you know what I mean? When you were a little kid? You see him as, like, like, there's someone that, like, there's something I can strive, aspire to be? Or when you say a role model, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Not really, because, like, at the time, I was just kind of in my own thing. I wasn't even around the reservation after sixth grade, you know.
Yeah.
But I'd talk to him or hear stories about him through my cousins that were still there.
Like, yeah.
You know, and he created this whole healthy lifestyle and just promoting that.
Okay, cool.
So, and, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know too many people that were
made it seem cool to be healthy and
right,
not do drugs and stuff.
The culture was very focused on
yeah,
booze and
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. So then went to, so you left when you were 12. You come down to Arizona.
Yeah.
And then skip ahead. And then how did you end up in the Marines?
The Marines? That was like something in my, like I was in my senior high school. I had nothing planned. I didn't do any SAT or I didn't take a test or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
I had no plans, dude. I had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
And my parents were pushing me, they're like, you know, join the military. My cousin, he was about to go in the army. And my parents were, they kind of pushed me towards the Marines. And I'll just like push it, I'd push back. You know, I was like, screw you, I don't want to do this. Stop bringing me here. You know?
Classic, dude.
Just leave me alone. Well, I don't
sure.
want, this is not an option for me.
Sure, yeah.
And so finally they quit.
And that's when finally you're I'm doing this because I want to, not because you told me to.
Yeah. And the only person I talked to were the Marines. I don't know. It was just something about the uniform, like, and the way that, like, they were compared to the rest of the armed forces.
Mm-hmm. They're seen as more elite.
Well, this recruiter, before he was in recruiting, he was like a machine gunner in the infantry, dude. He was like 5'8", 175 pounds, he was just jacked.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go look at the army, you see guys in just like their camis, loose-fitting clothes, and stuffing a fat burger in their mouth or something, you know? Like, I want to be like that guy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what happened. Now, I talked to him, and he's like, I ended up graduating 6 months early, and I was supposed to leave in July after I turned 18.
Uh-huh.
And I signed the paperwork in September of 2004, you know, for the plane entry program.
It's a 4-year?
It was 5 years, actually, because
okay.
The training for my job took over a year to complete.
Okay.
So
what was your job?
I was an avionics electrician.
Ooh,
I would repair like circuit boards and stuff for
fancy
computers and jets.
Yeah. Yeah. And little buttons and dials and
yeah.
Shit. Yeah.
It's almost like I worked like a Radio Shack.
Yeah.
Just repairing stuff like that.
Oh, dude, avionics. What'd you say?
Avionic
technician?
Electrician.
Electrician, okay.
Yeah. Well, I originally wanted
to. Sounds way cooler than Radio Shack.
Well, I originally tried to go for crash, fire, and rescue. Firefighting on the flight line.
Uh-huh.
And when I took the ASVAB scores, you know, I didn't even study. I just was like, yeah, I'll take it. Just no preparation whatsoever.
Yeah.
End up not scoring as high as I want, and I miss it by a few points. He's like, oh, and my recruiter was telling me this. He's like, well, you can't. He never even gave me the option. Like, well, you could take the test again if you want. He was like, what job are you picking?
And funny how you phrase things a certain way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he just phrased it a certain way, and you had no idea that you could be taking it.
Yeah, so I told him that. He's like, well, you're not scoring high enough. He's like, well, how about this one over here? And avionics electrician, so I don't know. I'm smart enough to repair circuit boards, but not smart enough to be a firefighter.
Right.
Made no sense to me.
Yeah. Was there a lot of stuff that didn't make any sense to you in the military?
Yeah.
Because if I'm taking our government job that we have now, and if I extrapolate that and put it on the military, it makes me very sad.
On a military scale, dude, it's just,
I imagine it 10 times bigger.
Yeah.
100 times bigger. What were some things you saw that?
It was more easy to sit there, just eyes forward and just go along with the flow. Don't say anything. Don't try to pay no mind to all the bureaucracy and the bullshit that goes on, dude.
Yeah.
It's a very good experience, but
yeah.
I was like one of the youngest guys at boot camp, and I see all these dudes from Texas and Wyoming and Arkansas and all this crazy stuff all meeting in San Diego. And the way they do it is they try to make it as painful as possible. Just the experience. But they're not going to do it like punch you in the face all the time or anything
sure.
like that. But anything to make your life miserable, to make you want to give up and quit, that's what they're going to do. Like, they're going to try their hardest.
Right.
And that's their job, is to weed out the people who can't hack
right.
it. But it's like almost joining this...
That's an interesting perspective. That it's literally like is
joining this big frat that everybody knows is there.
Uh-huh.
And what they do, you know?
Right.
It's... Like I told you before, it's like dick measurements, dude.
I fucking hate dick measurements.
That's what it seems, because like right out of boot camp, dude, that was me. I was like, I would talk shit to army soldiers and stuff like that. I'm like, you're a fucking fuck ass army dude.
Because you were the top shit marine.
Yeah, throughout 3 months, 12 weeks of boot camp of saying we're the best there is that's out there. We're the most badass.
Right.
Our standards are higher compared to everyone else's because we don't want to look like a bag of shit.
Right.
So we had to live up to these standards and taught this history of the entire Marine Corps.
Right.
You know, it's like brainwashing for 3 months straight. It's just saying the same thing
over and over again. Sure. I mean, as much as I don't enjoy brainwashing, that has such a negative reputation, the word brainwashing. When you're in a hierarchical situation like that, especially a social hierarchy, where the whole system depends on you, the subordinate, listening to your supervisor under any circumstance, right?
Yeah.
Then you have to be brainwashed to a certain degree. Same way that when you go to school, you have to be brainwashed. Like, I'm the teacher, you're the student, you listen to me because that's how it fucking works. I'm asking you questions. You know what I mean? That's how any social hierarchy works. Brainwashing is... Yeah, that's interesting, man. But I mean, that's how it should work. I mean, that's how that system works. Or our entire system works.
Yeah. And so, what was I saying about boot camp?
Wait, were you having short-term memory loss, dude?
Just a little. Get off track.
Those are the best parts of conversations, though. Yeah, so you were saying that at boot camp you were sick of dick measurements.
Yeah.
And
that's the very basis of the Marine Corps, dude. And, you know, the order is like, you want to be this guy that does 20 pull-ups and runs 18-minute 3 miles and 100 crunches. And you don't want to be that type of person in Marine.
Right.
The Marine that says, yes, sir, does everything, no question, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
As soon as I got to the fleet and saw like how everybody is just like relaxed, you know, they're not so. We call them motivated.
Uh huh.
Like, you know, someone's like, "Come on, guys."
What euphemism is that for?
Someone who's like really enthused, that loves their job.
Okay.
They love being Marine.
Okay.
They, you know.
A Ben.
Yeah.
Okay.
Someone who, just loves their job and does, you know, just...
I envy those people, to be honest.
I mean, they do seem a lot happier.
Yeah, they do, man. I envy people like that. Because I don't... Sometimes people get this, like, extreme passion from...
Yeah.
Like, something that I find so, like, just mundane.
Yeah.
But there's probably things that we both find exciting that other people would be like, why are you so excited about this for? You know?
Yeah.
But they really, I'm kind of envious of people like that are just fucking into it, no matter pretty much what it is.
No.
Yeah. So anyway, there are people like that?
Oh, yeah.
Motivated.
Yeah, motivators. Like, kind of like how RJ is.
Okay, yeah.
You know, how he's always finding something to do, always have to be working, can't sit still.
Yeah.
And does whatever he's told by Chapia or whoever.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Right.
But, you know, I hung out with the people that were kind of came from the same background that I have.
Uh-huh.
You know, mostly, you know, people who came from, like, bad neighborhoods and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Listen to trap music.
Yeah. Nice, dude.
Things like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a brotherhood that never goes away unless you go kill a bunch of people or just do something stupid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, do you still feel like an allegiance in your heart to... Like, you're always a Marine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like,
and it was a good experience. When you came out the other side, you can go to college, right? You can get the what's it called? What's the
GI Bill?
The GI Bill.
Yeah. Like, yeah, well, for me and my family, it was, this is the furthest that somebody's gone with their life in a long time.
Really? You are?
I was the first one to get my high school diploma.
Nice, man. My mom. Oh, I had no idea. Really?
My mom, she dropped out when she was like 14.
Yeah. When did she have her first kid?
When she was 14.
When she was 14. That's unbelievable.
And that's my older sister. Then she had me when she was 18.
Yeah.
And yeah, my older sister, she, you know, same story with pretty much all my sisters except for the ones that live here in Arizona.
You made it, you got your high school diploma.
Yeah, well, like, my sister Rainey, she had the option of staying up there in Washington with the rest of her family, you know. My mom pretty much took me and the younger ones.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that were like 6 and 5 years old. And there was us three, while she was pregnant with my other sister, Winona. You know, we packed up and drove 3 days on the road back here. And just saying goodbye and not wanting to go, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And as soon as I came down here, everything changed. I had to work. I never had to do that. You know, like how I said, you'd find your hustle on the reservation?
Yeah.
Like, there's a bunch of times where you'd be hungry, you have nothing to eat. And for us, that we knew where, who had an apple tree, where the apple trees are, or cherry tree, or where to find blackberries and huckleberries and blueberries.
Sure, yeah.
We knew what to eat and where to find it. Or we'd get these things, and the government assisted us somehow. I don't know how it works, but we have these things called commodities.
Okay, explain that. What's that?
Commodities is like the government gave you a box full of groceries.
Okay.
You know, your rice, cereal, soups, stuff like that. But it was, you would never see this in a grocery store.
Never see what?
The labels or the
off brands kind of things, yeah, or it's leftovers. What do you think they were?
No, there's these boxes and containers and cans with nothing but white labels and black lettering, no advertisements, no commercial or anything. Just this is what it is, like corn.
Okay.
Corn flakes.
Okay.
Then, you know, all the
corn flake cereal
and just government cheese.
The generic of the generics. The
very basic.
Okay. So they would give that to you on the rate, but it wouldn't be enough.
No.
Okay. What's that phrase about, like, desperation leads to intuition, or desperation leads to, I don't know. You know, it's when you have to figure something out.
Yeah.
You figure it out.
Yeah.
When you're hungry, you go find who has the nearest apple tree, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, people in the community, they would help each other out.
But yeah.
They would never buy anything new. If they did, they would have, like, a good job.
Yeah.
And if they had a good job, they wouldn't be on the reservation.
Really? They'd leave?
Well, if you have a good job, depending on, like, how much it pays. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, this thing with my house. You know, I never in my life thought I'd own a house.
Yeah, dude, it's pretty cool. You're 27.
Yeah, 28. Yeah.
Are you 28? That's right. You just turned 28, sucker.
And so
that was a 2-year gap, baby.
Yeah, but like on the reservation, nobody buys a house.
Yeah,
they have like a housing project where like if someone, they already have these houses built, and it's just rotating families. If someone dies or moves out, or you don't qualify for that house anymore.
Yeah,
you move on, and some of their family would be there.
Okay, so there's no rent. Do people pay rent to somebody, or?
Not that I know, no.
Okay, so it's all a community, and people live in the community houses, basically. So
they could pay rent, but it's just, I've never talked to my family about that. Okay. Like, how it works with the housing.
Yeah.
And,
Short-term memory loss, man. You gotta lay off the bud, bro. Still.
I gotta jump start. Yeah, but yeah. So yeah. Nobody, like, this is the first time that I'm experiencing of having, like, even the opportunity. Me owning a house is crazy,
dude. I think it's unbelievable what you've done. I mean, just from last year, the last time I saw you. I don't want to bring up fucking bad memories, but the last time I saw you,
yeah,
we were in California, Northern California, near where I live on the King Fire.
Yeah.
Remember? And on the radio, they say, Crew 5, you need to contact, I think it was communications,
yeah,
directly, ASAP. And Sam looks at me and goes, oh, fuck, that's not good news.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, oh, when communications contacts you, then something went wrong.
Yeah.
Like somebody's family members and doing well, it's bad.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, it's bad. 5 minutes later, here comes the call from George. Oh, yeah, can Lauren come down here? I was like, oh, shit, dude. That's the last time I saw you.
Yeah.
Right? You left smiling. I remember Kyle and I were sitting there. And you walk down the hill, and we're like, see you, Lauren. And you did that note. You were just like, yeah, all right, man. And fucking walk down. It's the last time I saw you.
Yeah.
And then you got the bad news, the terrible news. And then I got a couple drunk calls from you in the off season.
Yeah.
Before I left, and my phone didn't work. And then all of a sudden, boom, come back. We have a relatively short season. I think it was five and a half months.
Yeah.
And now, that's the last time I saw you. That was 6 months ago. No, that was a year ago.
Yeah.
That was a year ago. And in between then and now, you now are sober, have a house, have a motorcycle, have still the same good job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable, don't you think?
Yeah, I spent a lot of money on booze.
You wouldn't be able to afford the badass motorcycle parked out front.
Yeah.
If you kept drinking, you would have spent it all on booze. But now you just spent it all on weed, which is a much better substitute, I think.
Well, it's not as much. You know,
no, it's not. Plus, now you can grow it at your house, man. I don't know what the rules are here in Arizona, but you can grow it there.
Yeah, but the thing with my sister passing away,
yeah,
is something that happens very common on the reservation.
People
die at a young age.
Well, that's what the statistic, man. Indian youth. It's funny that this website, they said Native American for all of it, then all of a sudden for this statistic they said Indian.
Yeah,
whatever. Indian youth have highest rate of suicide among all ethnic groups. And is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, suicide. A lot of my family from the reservation, actually, the way that they died could technically be called suicide.
But hers wasn't.
No.
But it's just accidents like that?
It's unfortunately like a lot of their lifestyle.
Okay. That
brings it on them.
Right, sure. Like, when you're drinking and...
like, this tattoo I have right here.
Yeah.
I've
never taken a real good look at that.
I wanted it to kind of remind me of my family back on the reservation and Washington State, and it's a pair of boxing gloves with four people's initials.
A C B C W C.
Or it's supposed to be W J and D J.
W J.
Yeah.
DJ. Okay.
My grandpa, he used to train boxers.
Oh, cool.
And my dad was a boxer, and his cousins and his brothers were boxers. And my dad, him being a good boxer, or just being a boxer in general, when he would be drinking, he broke my mom's nose.
Right.
But...
he knew what to do.
Arnold and Barney, these guys are brothers. They're my cousins. Mm-hmm. Their families, it's tragic to you, but... Arnold, I want to say, he died of an overdose on pills.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that can be considered a suicide. And Barney, he he was at this party in the middle of winter. He got so drunk, he's like, I'm going to go pass out in the car.
Uh-huh.
Passes out in the car, dies of hypothermia.
No way.
Yeah.
I heard about that little sidebar real quick. Last winter, I remember hearing about a Minnesota girl. It's not funny, but it pertains to what you just said.
Yeah.
That she got so drunk. It's funny because I can imagine, like, a lot of me, myself, and a lot of friends I know in college doing this if we were in a cold climate.
Yeah.
She got hammered, went outside, passed out in the snow, woke up the next morning, they had to amputate all four of her limbs.
What?
Yeah. She passed out in the snow and just got complete frostbite. I mean, it was like negative 10 outside. It was in Minnesota or Michigan or something. Can you believe that?
Yeah. That's crazy.
I mean, it's not that hard to conceive of.
No, it's not. If
you have one party where you're a little too drunk and you just fall asleep outside, but it happens to be negative 10.
Yeah.
The alcohol's telling your skin it's telling your brain, you know, it reduces the blood circulation to your skin. So it's telling you you're not that cold. You wake up in the morning and, man, that would be the worst morning in the fucking world, dude. Can you imagine that?
Waking up in no arm.
Yeah. Anyway, go on. I'm sorry. So yeah, a lot of people, the accidents, like what happened to your sister.
Yeah. Then also, like,
that isn't rare. People weren't shocked.
No, especially.
But you're not on a reservation right now.
No.
But you're saying
drugs. The drugs is a very major component into it too, because when I was in eighth grade, I was 13 years old. That's the first time I went to a party and drank beer and smoked weed.
Were you 13?
No, I was with my cousins, and sometimes my sister would join me, the one that passed away, Tina, because she was a year younger than I was, and we'd hang out, do all the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's when I had to come back to Arizona again, because we moved down here. My mom let me go back for a year of school, and I was supposed to come back. And I didn't want to come back. I wanted to stay because I wanted to stay with my sisters and the rest of my family.
Yeah, sure.
And so my mom scheduled this flight for me to go, and I never show up. I never make an attempt to go to the airport. And I told my mom, no, I'm staying here. My mom gets mad, puts me as a statewide runaway, and I'm on the run.
What?
On the reservation, you know.
Where were you?
At my grandma's house. That's where most of my cousins were, you know, who were on the run would go.
Yeah. When they didn't want to be at their parents' house anymore.
Yeah.
Go to grandma's house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember one time they came up and knocked on the door, and I was hiding between the couch and the window, and I could hear them talking to my grandma, asking me about me, and, you know, explaining the situation, and my grandma's like freaking out.
Who was it? The police?
Yeah, it was the police.
You have reservation police?
Yeah, tribal police.
Tribal police, okay.
And I remember one time I was riding this mountain bike with one of my friends down this road, and the cops passed by us. And then I saw him turn around, and I look back, and he's turning around, and I start taking off. I'm riding this bike through the people's lawns and backyards and cutting through neighborhoods and taking dirt roads till I'm on the edge of the reservation by the river. And I stop, like, it's probably like 5 miles away, just because I knew what was going on and I didn't want to get caught by the cops.
Who does?
Then eventually, you know, it goes, you know, I cave in, and I'm like, everybody's telling me at this point, you know, it's not even worth it, just go back. And so I ended up coming back to Arizona for high school. And that was, like, the worst years.
High school?
Just because, like, you know, for my parents, just because my hormones, and I wanted to rebel and shit like that, you know.
My hormones. That's probably the best description of high school years.
Well, when you hit puberty, you know.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot more important things than being a good child.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you finally you know, now looking at where you're at now as compared to a year ago, especially what happened to your sister, you know, all that pressure like you were talking about.
Yeah.
Because you have done, because you were the one who graduated, you went to the Marines, you kind of, you know, made something of yourself.
Yeah.
I would say then all the pressure was on you. Correct? Yeah. After what happened, and that's what led you into this kind of spiral?
Well, I'd say it's, the pressure's always kind of been on me that yeah. way. You know, just because I was the first in the family to get the high school diploma.
Yeah.
That was what put everything on my shoulders, and that pressure. It was like, yeah. All right, now, what do I do now?
Isn't that crazy, dude? It's amazing.
Yeah, like, I tell everybody this. Like, what led me to join the Marines, I was like, I'm not doing anything for the next 4 years. Why the hell not? You know, and that's what, pretty much what happened, dude. I was like, all right, I'll go check it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, making the friends that I know. And, you know, it's one of those experiences where you it makes you become a man.
Yeah.
Where you have to, you know, give everything you got and see, you know, your personality.
If what you're made of.
Yeah, what you're made of.
Nice.
You see how many people quit and see how many people that stay in and some how many people go crazy. It exposes you to a lot. And it's very psychological what they do.
Yeah.
Because in San Diego, we're right next to the airport, and that's all you hear all day is planes there. Taking off and coming in, and you're in this hell, and, you know, away from your family, in boot camp, thinking, what the fuck am I doing here?
Right.
And you're hearing people leave on the airplane.
Where are they going?
Yeah.
Where are those people coming back from? Where are they going?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And picturing yourself that being you, and there's people that hop the fence and run on the runway.
You're kidding.
To the airplanes. I remember I saw one drone instructor holding this kid butt naked in the middle of, like, you know, middle of the day, sun's out, everybody sees, he's crying his head off, dude, covering his junk, just trying to let go and everything, you know, just cause he didn't want to do it anymore.
He broke down.
Yeah. That we saw, I saw one guy our first night, not even our first night staying in the bunks, he gave up. Everybody's at the airport waiting for the bus to pick us up. The bus picks us up. And you go, you get off the bus. They wait, they make you wait until like midnight. Then they'll take you off the bus and you stand in what they call the yellow footprints. And this is a big deal, you know, symbolizing that you went through this badass boot camp of the Marines, the yellow footprints.
Okay. So this is the initiation? This is at the
beginning? Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the drone instructor would come out. He'd tell you to grab empty thing out of your pockets, grab all the stuff, new underwear, new shirts, new everything. And they're like, you know, I can't do this with you yelling at me. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm giving up. You know?
That was within the first hour?
Yeah.
Wow. So what kept you... Did you ever think about quitting?
A lot.
Well, yeah. Okay, but let me... Did you ever seriously consider quitting?
No, because I didn't want to deal with the embarrassment of seeing my family, telling them that I gave up.
So that's what kept you going?
Yeah. I can't fucking puss out of it now. I already signed the contract. And the way that my recruiter got me... I knew this guy was going to fuck me over. This is what recruiters do. They sweet-talk you, these young kids, you know, preying on these guys straight out of high school that don't want to go to college, you know.
They don't have too many options.
It's not. I'm not saying that's all...
Right, of course.
But, yeah. You know, that's what seems the prerogative
is. It's a sales position.
Yeah, it's the most easiest way to brainwash you is when you're still young and you don't know anything about the rest of the world.
Sure, you're impressionable.
Yeah. And, you know, I just got my diploma in December. You know, I was like, all right, I got like 7 months till I go to boot camp. What should I do? And hang out with my girlfriend and, you know, I guess I should look for a job or something.
Yeah.
And he called me like a couple days after Christmas, I want to say. He's like, hey, I got this guy who was supposed to go to boot camp next month. He got sick, he can't go. I'm asking you to see if you're man enough to do it. And you know me, I'm 17 years old, I'm like,
great fucking line for a 17.
Yeah, I was like, are you man enough to do this shit? I'm like, fuck yeah, man, I'm out to do it right now. That's pretty much what happened, dude.
I ain't no bitch. My dick is huge.
Yeah, that's all dick missions.
Yeah. That's a fucking unbelievable line, dude, for a 17-year-old. I mean, that... You could have sold it. I think you could sell 99% of 17-year-olds on that line.
Yeah.
Are you man enough? You don't... In the way you phrase things, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great sales pitch right there. You don't say like, hey, man, I'd like you to come out and maybe check out the Marines. What do you think? Are you man enough to do this?
Yeah.
You have... There's... At that point, you have two responses. Yes.
No, I'm not man enough to say that.
Yeah, who's going to want to say that? Who's going to want to sit there and say, no, sir, I am not man enough to do what you request? No one's no 17-year-old's going to want to say that.
Yeah.
You're right, yeah. Wow, that's good. Well, then you ended up there, but...
Yeah, and that in a way, like, kind of, it done a lot for my family. You know, because the last person in my family actually go to the military was my grandpa.
Mm.
My grandfather, both my grandfathers were in Vietnam.
Nice, okay. So there was this interesting, like, feedback loop where you were helping your family, and in turn, your family was your inspiration for finishing.
Yeah.
For completing the boot camp and for doing it.
Yeah, and my family's that pressure on me for me to strive and... That pressure gets to me sometimes.
Does it?
Yeah, it does a lot.
Yeah? Heavyweight?
Yeah, I'll have my moments where like it's a little too much. And it's mostly after right when we get off of fires.
Oh, I remember you telling me about that because you get back and it's just everyone. Hey, we're doing this, we're doing that.
It's just like this constant go, go, go. Because like my mom has this way of... working her lifestyle, I would say.
Sure.
She's never not doing anything. It's hard for her to sit and stand still.
Mm-hmm.
She's always cleaning the house. She's always doing garden work, finding something to do. And she'd tell me this. She's like, no peace, must work. And so she's always on my case and like, you gotta keep going. You gotta keep doing this. You gotta, you know.
Where do you think that comes from?
Was
this their personality, you think, or
something that's hasn't really been around my family, I would say.
So the
positive inspiration of like, hey,
and they see it in you, and you're one of the oldest, and so
yeah.
So what do you do to cope? I don't know why I asked that question.
It helps out a lot, dude.
Yeah.
So
you can just take a step back and.
Relax and just get the inspiration again.
Remember did alcohol ever give you inspiration?
No, it did not, dude. It gave me inspiration to look forward to the next drink.
Yeah.
I was, you know, after a while, like, the beginning stages was like, I'd wait till night. When it was nighttime, that's when it was time.
Sure.
Then it slowly progresses, like, well, I still got a little bit in the morning. Why not now? I'd just kill it and that'd be it. Then it started doing it at lunch and going like getting a bottle of for like a night.
Like a fifth?
Yeah.
For a night, like that size of that tequila bottle.
Yeah. I'd probably get like halfway, then the next day I'd finish it off.
Damn. Yeah.
And you know, it's being sober this long is the longest I've been sober, like, I'd say, like, 10 years. You know?
Do you see...
Not having a drink or anything like that.
You have a year goal, right?
Yeah.
Do you see yourself after the year getting kind of reintroducing it? Or do you see this as your new lifestyle?
I kind of look forward to when I can have a beer again.
Yeah.
You know, I love drinking IPAs and beers and, you know, I want to have celebration beer.
Yeah.
But I could probably do this as a lifestyle. I'd have to see myself, how I'd feel at the...
Yeah.
Ask me again in January. Dude.
Sure, yeah.
I'd let you know. And sure. Right now, I'm just like...
We'll do another one then. Well, when we come back and I come back next season, we'll do another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because... because I recently, you know, I went to this... I had a beach house with my friends.
Yeah.
Like, we do it every year. I've done it for 9 years now. And, and dude, alcohol, I feel like, is just one of those drugs that, from a lot of friends I talk to, and myself included, that it doesn't... It's really... It's very easy to cross the line with alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, and I really... I don't drink that much. I don't, like... Yeah, I never got to that point that you're at. I never had a tragedy to spark that.
Yeah.
I could easily see that happening with myself.
Yeah.
But... You know, when you're sitting there and, like, like at the beginning of this season, like, in that transition where I move in a new place and there's not much going on, and, I get lonely and bored.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, where are there people hanging out? Well, I guess I'll go to the saloon. And,
yeah.
Well, 5 or 6 beers later, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm kind of drunk. And so that can easily turn into a habit. And a lot of friends I have... You know, I think that alcohol is really, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
And after I had this beach house with my friends, I woke up kind of slightly hungover, and I realized that I wasn't engaging with my friends as well as I wasn't present as well as I could have been because I was slightly hungover, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't 100% like there.
Yeah.
You know, I had a headache and I was a little tired.
Yeah.
Well, so then what do you do when you're a little hungover?
Have another drink to
compensate, right?
Yeah.
So then that continued, and by the last day, I was just like a fucking zombie. So you know what? I was enjoying myself thoroughly.
Yeah.
With my friends. Sober. Stone cold sober. I could have drank fucking club soda and lime, and I would have had a great time.
Yeah.
But for some reason, there's like this allure with alcohol that, you know, even if you're having a great time now... Oh, guess what? If you have that beer, you're going to have a better time. But it's not the case. It's like this perpetual illusion that is always there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I told myself that I was just going to quit drinking for a year like you did. You were my inspiration.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really help me at all. For me personally, it doesn't really help me either. Because I want to be able to go and just have like 1 or 2.
Yeah.
So it's hard. I mean, everybody's different, man. But I totally agree that, like, it's just... It's such a slippery slope, man. And it's such an easy fix, and it's everywhere. That if you do have a tragedy in your, you know, in your family, you know...
Yeah.
Or you're feeling... You're sitting there on a Sunday afternoon at 3 in the afternoon, and you're lonely. You know? It's right there. It is right fucking there. It's a 5-minute drive, man. And you can drown the bottle, and you can at least forget about your sorrows and look forward to the next drink, like you said.
Well, yeah, and like, then you have like this communities, like this, you know, some people from earlier this year, like around the hog fire in May and June.
Yeah.
Remember, we're sitting over there in Douglas.
Yeah.
You see how many people drive around with beers in the back of their trucks, dude.
Yeah.
Having roadies.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, this is what people do a lot and abuse.
Yeah.
And, but like on the reservation, dude, it's so much more frequent when I went through it, and just talking to family members, that's, you know, kids just growing up knowing or being around people who are drunk all the time.
Yeah.
And people are dying from, like, I know this one of my dad's friends named Warren, he wasn't very much older, I would say. He didn't even make it to 35, I would say. He died cirrhosis of the liver.
Yeah.
He drank so much. You know. I had his uncle, we call him Chief, but his real name was Harold, but my dad's name is Harold. So we didn't call him Harold, we called him Chief. And, you know, he had his son, baby Harry, you know, and we never met his old lady or baby Harry's mom. I don't know what happened to her, but Chief, he wanted to be a good dad. He was a good guy, you know, but he'd drink. He'd drink with my dad. And I just saw it happening where he would leave him at his grandparents and he'd just be wandering all over on the side of the road, or like we'd play basketball and he'd try to come play basketball, I would smell it on his breath.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and him just being slow and sloppy with the drunk and just, you know, you see it everywhere.
You think that helped you to make this decision now? Seeing what could be?
Yeah.
I
would say.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, my mom would use that. She got to get me to quit drinking when I was in the Marines.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in the Marines, it's, you know, going through the Marines through that that part of my life, you know, from 18 to 22, that's the same years of, like, college years, dude.
Yeah.
So, what do people do in college? They drink.
Heavily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what, it's no different in the military.
Yeah.
You know. That's what we would do.
Yeah, right.
And it was great.
Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up, man. I need to go pay my rent, and it has been an hour already. Nice. But yeah, man, it's fucking awesome what you've been doing. Like I told you, super proud of you, man.
Well, thanks for having me on, dude.
Yeah, man, it's cool because you listen to it and you share it all the time when I post it on Facebook.
Yeah, well, like I remember, like we're talking about Joe Rogan, and you were talking about his podcast.
Yeah.
And I've been in podcasts for a while, and I was like, you like podcasts, dude? He's like, yeah. I'm like, dude, that's crazy. And just, like, having that connection, and he's like, it's pretty cool, dude.
Yeah.
And that, like, seeing how far you've come with it, man. You like, now you're hosting your own and having this website, and, you know, and just helping you promote you, dude. It's really awesome.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, dude. Yeah, it's been fun, man. Yeah, I didn't think... I had a lot saved for the past year, but I didn't actually get started until... You know where I got it started, man?
What?
Talk about ironic. I started it at the fucking saloon. Yeah, I went there and I was like, I need to get this done, man. It was weighing on me.
Yeah.
And I went to the saloon and had a couple of beers and put on my computer. They have excellent Wi-Fi at the saloon.
Nice.
You know, so that's why I go.
Yeah.
And finally got it going, dude. So it's cool that you're such a fan of podcasts. And you listen to mine a lot, and I get to have you on as my guest.
It's crazy, dude.
So, yeah, it's cool. I'm sure we'll have another one next season. We can talk about how maybe you've reintroduced a couple beers.
Yeah.
But we got to go get a picture of us two on the motorcycles
so
I can post it on the website. So I need to change into boots and cowboy boots to look like you.
All right, nice,
dude. All right, Lauren, thanks for coming on, dude. All right.